Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome to the Friday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today for the golfing Mark Reardon. I've been getting golf updates from Mark. The first one indicated, he said, Brad, I hope your show today goes better than my golf game. And then I got a second text after I sent him a picture of Rodney Dangerfield on the golf course in Caddyshack. He then wrote me and said, no, actually, it's not that bad. So I don't know how he defines good or bad, but he's having a good time. And we're going to have a good time. Sue, good to see you. Good to see you.
Nice to see you, Brad. Thanks for coming in.
And we're going to talk about this in the next hour, but you've got a new show coming up over on KMOX, don't you?
Yeah, and here.
And here?
Yeah.
And we're going to dive into that. Give us a little tease. We'll talk about it more in the next hour.
It's called The History of the Lou with Sue, and we're going to delve into kind of the interesting stories that make up the history of St. Louis. Some you do know, some that you don't.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks.
Very
good. I think it'll be fun.
I am looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to the roundtable today. Joining us today, John Gaskin, Democrat lobbyist in Jeff City, former head of the NAACP St. Louis branch. John, nice to meet you, sir.
Nice to meet you as well. Glad to be here today, as always.
Well, you've got big shoes to fill because you know, between you and Jeff, you know, there's no Jane Duker today. So Jeff Smith, everybody knows Jeff. I don't have to give you an invitation or to give you your background. But the two of you, now, does the two of you equal Jane?
No way.
Oh, or Jane's a lot to tackle.
Okay. Jeff, glad you made it in today.
Yep.
Dennis Hancock, St. Louis County Councilman, former mayor of Fenton. Good to talk to you, sir.
I appreciate you having me.
Well, we have no shortage of topics to talk about today. So the first thing I want to dive into is something local, because Sam Page announced recently over the past week or week and a half that he wants a new St. Louis County headquarters building. I looked into this. It's going to cost $562 million. And that's just the projected cost. Of course, anytime you get a cost estimate for a government building, it inevitably goes higher. But John, I want to start with you. Is this a good idea? What are your thoughts about a new St. Louis County headquarters?
You know, I'm not sure. I haven't done enough research on it, but I know from the presser that the county executive did a couple of weeks ago, the media tour, they talked about some of the asbestos challenges, the sprinklers, the tight regarding space, things like that. I'm not sure, but perhaps it's worth looking into what it would cost to do some improvements versus leveling the entire building and taking on a half a billion dollar project. I'm not sure. I don't know, but I hope that folks will do their due diligence and look into if this is the smartest move for county taxpayers.
You know, it's interesting. My brother-in-law is an architect. You mentioned the sprinklers. And in every movie we've ever seen where the sprinklers go off, right, the sprinkler, the water that comes out of the sprinklers looks like pool water. Mm. And I was having dinner with my brother-in-law one time, and we were talking about the mm-hmm. sprinkler system. And he said, no, that's not how it really is. Because when the sprinklers go off, it's water that's been sitting there for 50 years, and it comes out, and it's dank, and it's dark, and it's smelly. It never looks like pool water like it does on mm-hmm. TV shows when the sprinklers go off. But I want to get to you, Dennis, because what are your thoughts on a new St. Louis County? You're there. You are actually in that building on a regular mm-hmm. basis. Do we need a new one?
You know, I think that, you know, everybody wants a new house. I think that... you know, that we found out about this late in 2015 from the city of Clayton when they changed their codes and required buildings over a certain height to have sprinklers. And for the last 8 years, nothing's been done. And so now we're approaching the deadline of January 2028, and all of a sudden it's a crisis. My experience in the building industry tells me that we need to find out what it's going to cost to meet the code requirement,
right?
And buy some time for ourselves to then look at, you know, what do we need to do with the roof's building? Do we need to do some upgrades? Do we need to do, some improvements? You're talking about an architect. I told somebody the other day, a couple of years ago, my water heater started leaking. And so I made a few phone calls and to some plumbing contractors. And 2 days later, I had a new water heater. I didn't call an architect and say, hey, my water heater's leaking. I need a new house.
Yeah, good point. And Jeff, I want to go to you because a slightly different question, not just do we need a new building or not, but from your perspective, as you well know, I mean, you're a veteran of dealing with limited government resources, and there's always going to be more needs than there's money available. So from your perspective, is this the best way to allocate resources? Since right now we certainly got more needs than we have dollars. Is this the best way to spend $500 million by building a new building for more bureaucrats?
Again, it's tough to say. I'm inside those buildings a fair amount, and they are really dated. The numbers that I saw estimated that it would take about $175 million to bring it up to code. And so I think the question is a similar question to that a lot of us encounter when you got a car problem, right? You mm-hmm. take your car right. in and they're like, you know, you got to, yep. you know, you got problems, you know, you're going to need new rotors, you're going to need new brakes, you know, yep. and then they tell you it's going to be probably $2,700 all in. And you sit there and then you go to Kelly's Blue Book and you say, oh
worth.
Gosh, you know, my car is probably worth $6,000 on the resale market.
Yeah.
Should I really put in $2,700? And so I think that's really the decision that people like Councilman Hancock are going to have to make is, you know, would it be a better idea? And there may be some creative solutions out there. Clayton is obviously in demand. And one of the things mm-hmm. when I lived in New York City that organizations could do would be to demolish their building because the workforce now mm-hmm. in a post-pandemic workforce, a lot of people are not coming in as much. More That's people true. Are working from home. You might need less of a footprint, and you could use the air rights or, you know, the maybe go a little higher in some parts of Clayton would mm-hmm. let you, or potentially not use as much of the space, sell that off and make the, you know, and make a lot of the money that it mm-hmm. would cost to build the whole thing. So, you know, I'm sure that there's innovative, you know, ideas out there. And I trust that people like Councilman Hancock and County Executive Page will not just make a snap decision, mm-hmm. but maybe think through how to do this more creatively.
Good point. Hey, I want to stay with you, Jeff, here, because The Wall Street Journal, I actually read this article this week, and I've always subscribed to the Wall Street Journal for, I don't know, decades. And so it piqued my interest because the headline was St. Louis. Like, what's the Wall Street Journal saying about St. Louis? Well, they called it a doom loop, and I'm very proud of our area, and I don't like it when someone's dissing my city, you know? Mm-hmm. So I got a little defensive about it, But Jeff, I want to talk with you and see if you saw the article. But the gist of it is that because of a combination of crime, COVID, and the general deterioration of urban centers in many areas of the country, that the downtown area is boarded up. It looks decrepit. The foot traffic is slower. There's companies moving out of downtown, and they called it a doom loop. I've got some criticisms of that article, but what was your gut reaction?
Yeah, I mean, my gut reaction, kind of like you said, a lot of St. Louisans, we gripe to each other, but then when somebody else wants to talk trash about us, then we're like, hell no, you know? Like, and so that's, I think, kind of how I felt a little bit. You know, look, we're sitting downtown right now, and we all, you know, have seen some of the challenges around us. We know that a lot of law firms and banks and other companies have moved out of downtown.
Yeah, even KMOV.
Yeah, KMOV have moved to Clayton. I think that you know, public safety remains a challenge. It's not an insurmountable challenge. You know, we saw last year some of the numbers going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I think those of us who have spent some time with Chief Tracy understand that, like, he is a very competent guy, and he seems to be moving things in a better direction. We got a new city prosecutor, you know, Gabe Gore, who I think, you know, is, you know, leaps and bounds more capable than his predecessor, Kim Gardner, who obviously had a ton of challenges. Sometimes it takes a few years to get, you know, get a lot of cases through the system, you know, when you're charging and prosecuting people. So I'm optimistic that things will improve on that end. But in terms of COVID, we can't do anything about the fact that that created a sea change in the mentality of our workforce, particularly our young people who are saying, look, I want to work from home. And if you won't let me, you know, I won't work there. And we're going to, you know, I think a lot of cities, not just St. Louis, are going to have to readjust the way, you know, their entire footprint to take into account of those employment trends.
John, how do you see this as an issue with regard to the image of the city and the, some of the things that the Wall Street Journal said? Were they legitimate criticisms, or do you have pushback on that?
You know, look, and I think it rings true what you said. Look, I think it's concerning. As Freeman Bosley Jr. said earlier, I think he hit on something that's very valuable that we all should be concerned about. Wall Street Journal is read by people all over the world, their magazine and in their daily newspaper. That should be very concerning for us for a variety of reasons. Conventions, yes. It should be concerning for trade associations. It should be concerning for folks that are looking to move their corporations. That's not information you want people having top of mind regarding a major city in the Midwest.
And they all read the Wall Street Journal.
And Democrat, Republican, Independent, irregardless, they read it. It's on college campuses. It's everywhere. That's concerning, number one. Number two, however, something should be considered. A lot of great improvements have taken place downtown. You look at City SC. You look at a lot of the improvements that are taking place, the Battle Hawks that are right over at America Center. So at the Dome, there's a lot of great things taking place. Union Station. However, it is concerning, and I think it's something the administration should take very seriously and take a hard look at the realities of what they're looking at.
Can I say one more thing real quick? One piece of data really rebuts kind of their central argument, which is that 20 years ago, almost nobody lived in downtown.
That's true.
Okay? Right. And so, you know, we had about 1,000 people living in downtown at the dawn of the millennium, and now we got almost 6,000 people or so. Mm-hmm. So, yes. You hear a lot from some of the loft dwellers about challenges that they face. But the reason you didn't hear that 20, 25 years ago is because those people didn't exist.
Right. Well, and the pushback that immediately came to my mind, and Dennis, I'll get to you in just a second. But the pushback that came to my mind was that as I looked at the amount of space that was covered by the Wall Street Journal article, it was really only talking about 10 or 15 block area squared. And yet when you go beyond that, they never looked at Cortex. They never looked at the Central West End.
NGA.
They never even considered the fact that in North St. Louis, NGA will literally be transforming the entire way that North St. Louis looks when it comes to both the NGA and the feeder companies that will be locating close to NGA. It's going to transform that entire area. So that was my pushback, was that it was isolating the bad part without looking at the whole city of St. Louis as a whole.
I'd be curious to see what prompted this story. I'm curious what prompted it. You know, did they look at other similar sized cities? It makes you wonder what is the bigger cog in the wheel here in terms of what the strategy is and why this kind of story.
I got to think it was probably Jane.
You think it was Jane's fault? Well, you know what? Since Jane's not
here. I'm just kidding, Jane.
No, listen, let's blame Jane for everything because she's not here to defend herself. And then all she's going to do is post badly about us on social media. But other than that, we'll be in the clear. Hey, Dennis, obviously you're in the county, but you know as well as I do, as well as everyone does, that as the city goes, so goes the region. So how did you react to that Wall Street Journal article?
You know, I think that, as was said earlier, I think that, you know, we feel comfortable talking to each other and trashing the city, but somebody from the outside shouldn't be doing that. My concern is, as someone who lives in the county and is a involved with county government, is that we talk about the city and people from outside don't see the boundary line between the city and the county. And my concern is that those same epithets are going to be thrown against the county and against the entire region. And if we do that, we're all sunk. And so it's in everybody's best interest to make sure that the city works, that the county works, and that we all work together. Mm.
Well said. Hey, we're going to take a break here. More after this break. More, obviously, we'll be back with John Gaskin, Jeff Smith, Dennis Hancock. This is Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon. More next on The Mark Reardon Show right after this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Actually, today, it's what I like to call the Reardonless Roundtable. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon. Glad you're with us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk. I want to throw this topic out because I want to alternate between some local topics and international topics, but it's been the buzz in military circles here the last couple of days that the intelligence agencies are warning that an attack by Iran on Israel is imminent. And Dennis, I want to start with you, but from the perspective of not just how should the United States respond if and when such an attack occurs, but how does this impact the not the economy? How does this impact the election, rather, that's just right around the corner?
Well, I think that, the way I see it, this isn't a surprise. Iran has threatened for years to destroy Israel. So I don't think this imminent threat should be a surprise to anyone. But, I think it does have an impact on the election in that people are going to be looking at who's the stronger leader between the two major party candidates and who's more likely, if we are drug into a conflict in the Middle East, who's more likely to lead us to victory in that event? And that's a legitimate question to ask.
John, typically in years past, there's been this dimension that, generally speaking, Republicans are more aggressive from a national security standpoint, and Democrats are stronger when it comes to domestic policy. Yet this has been thrown on its ear since MAGA, the rise of MAGA, because now you have a lot of Republicans who don't want to support whether
America
it's Ukraine,
first, yeah.
You have the America First movement. They don't want to support Ukraine or other countries abroad, and you've got a lot of Democrats who are stepping into the gap. So, from number one, again, how should the United States respond if we do in fact see an Iranian attack on Israel? But how does that impact the election now that we have this flip, this jujitsu-like flip in many ways when it comes to national security?
Well, I think we all can agree we're living in very, very different times. Like you said, reality is this, if they end up attacking Israel, that's a major problem. Our president has a lot of things that he has to deal with, a lot of domestic things, and we have a lot of international challenges that are going on as well. But as it relates to what's happening and what's the norm, you know, I think it's interesting. I think you're seeing a lot of traditional folks as we focus into the election who are serious about saying, you know what, America needs to continue to be loyal to its allies. Obviously, have good, humane politics to that. But I think it's very concerning. And my hope is that there will be peace. I think the last thing we need is another international conflict that places America at risk as it relates to our national security.
Absolutely. Jeff, I want to twist it just a little bit on the topic, because after the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7, the United States responded overwhelmingly and positively in favor of supporting Israel. Once the reality crept in with regard to the Palestinians and the members of the Democrat Party that support Hamas or support the Palestinians, I won't say Hamas,
I was just about to interrupt you on that.
Right, yeah, yeah. I heard what I said. They support the Palestinians, and you've seen President Biden consistently move back from his unilateral support of Israel. But doesn't this, and God forbid we don't want any sort of a crisis to happen, I'm not suggesting that I do, but in the event something happened and President Biden gets to step in and assist Israel, there could actually be a positive outcome from an electoral standpoint to demonstrate that Biden is, in fact, supporting Israel, as opposed to what many of his critics have said, including myself recently, that he's been a little bit too pro-Palestinian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, there are certainly components of the Democratic Party that are sympathetic to Palestinian nationalist aspirations, especially among younger Democrats. Mm-hmm. But there aren't a lot of people of any party or any stripe in America that are sympathetic to Iran. So insofar as this conflict and the dimensions thereof become more Iran versus Israel and less Israel versus the Palestinians, I think that's probably an electoral, you know, you hate to talk about military conflicts where people die with respect to electoral implications.
Right. We want to make sure disclaimer's out there. Yeah. No one's suggesting we want conflict.
Yeah.
But how does it impact the election? That's what I want to get
certainly
at.
Certainly, insofar as the dynamics of it shift to a more Iran versus Israel, that's probably a positive for the president, because you might see something more of a rally around the flag effect that we've historically had in American politics. Now, keep in mind, that rally around the flag effect that you had in previous conflicts, like after 9/11, when George W. Bush had, I think, a 90% approval rating, that seems unheard of in today's hyper-polarized political climate,
right,
where, you know, you got a big segment of the Republican Party, I hate to say it, but saying pro-Putin stuff and saying pro-Russia stuff. You even saw it at CPAC this year, and that was really sad, I think, for the country. And similarly, you know, on the far left, you have some people that, you know, have said awful things about Israel, you know, which is unfortunate. But I think what's important insofar as is if this becomes Iran versus Israel, is that there is no faction in American domestic politics that could be pro-Iran. And I think that will be a positive for President Biden in this critical election season.
Yeah, I agree.
I tend to agree with that. The only caveat to that is I'm probably the only one here old enough to remember 1967 when Lyndon Johnson, because the Vietnam War was going so poorly, announced that he wasn't running for reelection. And I think if the conflict drags on, if it turns out poorly, then I think it may have the opposite effect.
Yeah, I agree. Like, quagmires are never good for sitting presidents, right?
No.
And America tends to like unite quickly, but then the longer a war goes on, often the less popular it becomes.
We need another Desert Storm where we go in 3 days later, we win.
Yeah, we wish they were like that. We wish they were all like the movies, but it rarely happens that way. Yeah, I think I actually think that there's a very good chance that because the U.S. intelligence agencies, contrary to what they usually do, they've actually come out and announced, we know that Iran is planning to take some action. Now that that surprised nature of that action has been diffused, I think that there's a very good chance. I obviously couldn't put a percentage on it. I don't think it's more than 51%, but I think there's a high percentage that this attack doesn't even occur because the shock effect has been eliminated by the fact that it's already been announced in advance. And I give kudos to the intelligence agencies for their willingness to release that information. Hey, I want to switch gears because we had this enormous event this week called the Eclipse. And it didn't impact St. Louis as much, although if you were driving to Cape Girardeau, it certainly impacted you. John, what did you think of the eclipse? And did you see it?
I saw the one, I believe it was, what, 7 years ago?
2017.
2017, and obviously this one. It is just a real natural wonder to see. I mean, how can you not look up at the sky and see that and not wonder if there's a greater being? It's so cool. It's so unique. The best part about it is it brought a lot of really great revenue to the state of Missouri, from Airbnbs to hotels to people buying fuel, eating, drinking, all of that great stuff. It just really brings out the best of our humanity. And it was a great opportunity for Missouri to be in the middle of all of it and have a chance to make some really, really great money for Missouri's revenue estimates.
That's right. Jeff, did you get to see it?
I was inside the Capitol.
Okay.
Just totally enmeshed in conversations. But honestly, I'm just going to be straight with you. The only thing that interested me less than the eclipse is like the royal family. So it's
I went out in the parking lot at my office because my law firm's in Chesterfield, and so we go outside, and everybody's out there, and everybody's wearing these stupid glasses, and I yelled out, "Hey, dorks," and everyone in my office turned to look at me, and I said, "Well, obviously, you recognize that you're dorks because you responded when I yelled out, 'Hey, dorks.'" But I was a little underwhelmed, to be honest, and I don't know if you can say that, but in St. Louis, we weren't in the path of totality like we were in 2017, and it was a little underwhelming. Dennis, what were your thoughts?
No, I was actually out of town in 2017, so I assumed this was probably going to be my last best shot at seeing one. And so I took my two grandchildren, who aren't quite as adult as they'd like to think they are, and we left here about 9:30.
Uh-oh.
And I've driven in New York, I've driven in Boston,
here we go.
LA, DC, Atlanta. I never thought I would experience that level of traffic between Crystal City and Festus. So
did you get a chance to make it there on
time?
We
made
it
to St. Genevieve.
Okay.
At 1:30. Pulled into the McDonald's parking lot and sat in the McDonald's parking lot, ate our lunch, and watched the eclipse.
Love it.
Wow.
So
there you go.
Gave ourselves a hug and got headed back.
My my wife was going down to the Cape Girardeau area with a friend of hers, sat in traffic for 4 hours just to go down there.
Minimum.
And finally, and she only got as far as Peavely.
Ooh.
And so she bailed at Peavely after 4 hours, and she sent me a selfie of her and her friend sitting along some state highway. And then she's coming back, and she's going over like to Redbud, Illinois, and I'm like,
"Uh-oh,
honey, are you lost? You know, what are you doing in Redbud, Illinois?"
She's looking for open roads.
Yep. And she was looking for open roads.
Yes.
That's exactly right, Sue. She should have been checking you out and finding out where the roads were clear.
Oh, there wasn't anything we could do. Four hours was right. They were moving at about 10 miles per hour.
Ugh.
So people who were sitting on the highway, what they do, just pull over and get out the car and watch it while you were...
That's what my wife did, and she wasn't in a McDonald's parking lot. She didn't have snacks. You know, at least you got some snacks at McDonald's.
But to Sue's point, I mean, after 4 hours of going 5 to 10 miles an hour, the traffic opens up, and then you're going 40, and you feel like you're going 150.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy.
It's true. It's really true.
Yeah, it's all what you're accustomed
to. But it was well worth the time and the effort.
Oh, good. Glad you enjoyed it. Hey, I hope you are enjoying the Mark Reardon Show Reardonless Roundtable this afternoon. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back talking about inflation. Does Biden own the inflation? How will it impact pocketbooks and the ballot box? Next on 97.1 FM Talk.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Nice to rejoin the show with a little Eric Clapton. Brad Young sitting in today for Mark Reardon. And Jeff, you mentioned during the break, you said, how could we have a roundtable without talking about the first ever criminal trial of a former president? Your thoughts, Monday, Donald Trump's going to trial in New York. Your thoughts?
It's going to be very interesting to see whether there's a significant percentage of Republican primary voters who never really warmed to Trump, right? And you saw that in the fact that even after he was a shoo-in for the nomination, Nikki Haley was still getting like 25-30% in a bunch of states. And when polled, that's kind of the group of people that were saying, you know, I'm not going to vote for Trump in the fall. You know, I'm not going to be able to do it. And yet he still seems to have this, you know, he's still extremely competitive, basically tied or slightly ahead in the seven key swing states that will decide this election. So I think the interesting question here is, you know, there have been so many times the Democrats have thought, well, we got him. I mean, I didn't think he was going to come back from the Access Hollywood tape when he said, you know, grab him by the blank, right?
Yeah.
And there were three or four other times like that when so many Democrats are like, well, he can't come back from that. But now you've got a big swath of the Republican primary electorate, like one out of four of them, just saying, like, look, if he gets convicted in a criminal trial, can't vote for him. And so let's see what happens here. It's going to be obviously a huge inflection point in American politics.
But see, on that point, though, this has been my position all along. I'm a very strong conservative. I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And yet when I look at this case in New York, this criminal trial, the fact that it's using what's called a bootstrapping legal maneuver because the feds chose not to prosecute on the election interference charge. The statute of limitations expires, and then New York City dreams up a way to do what's called zombie charges to try to resurrect a cause of action criminally that's already expired under the statute of limitations. When you look at all of those ruminations to try to make something out of nothing, doesn't that feed into the Republican mantra of Donald Trump is being persecuted? Doesn't it feed into that, especially when you look at this kind of litigation as being highly questionable?
So let me say two things. First of all, I hear you about the kind of legal machinations that went into that. And in fact, if you scroll way back and look at my Twitter from a year ago, I was saying that I don't think Bragg should bring this charge. I think he should let Jack Smith bring those charges first, which were much more serious, and probably skip this one. Because I was afraid it would do exactly what it's done, which was enable Trump to paint all the much more serious charges as "quote unquote" lawfare.
Right.
That
because,
said,
before you get to that, I want to bolster your point here, because when I look at the documents charge out of Mar-a-Lago, I said the first day those charges came, he will be convicted of those charges, and here's why. And I laid out all the legal reasons. Yeah. So I'm not a guy that points all of these litigation, whether it's criminal or civil, against Trump as being fraudulent, but this one is, and I think it allows him to paint the legitimate cases in the same brush as the illegitimate.
So I don't think it is fraudulent, okay? Because I think, yes, it is a novel legal theory, and yes, there is that bootstrapping that you described with the lapsed, you know, statute of limitations on part of that charge, which is why the feds didn't, and the feds decided that they didn't want to do it. But the facts are, I think, fairly simple. The underlying facts of the case, which is that he tried to, you know, do these payoffs to conceal at a critical time. Just the payoffs happened right in the wake of the Access Hollywood tape. So he was hanging by a thread with even people like Paul Ryan, you know, who had been the last Republican vice presidential nominee, saying, like, I can't support this anymore. You know, who was the Speaker of the House, you know, the top Republican House, saying, I'm done, I'm out. And a lot of prominent Republicans saying that. So he was hanging by a thread. So there was an election related reason. And I would argue the primary reason that he did those payoffs right after the Access Hollywood tape. So I do think that those hush money payoffs did constitute an illicit campaign contribution that was then concealed in the way that it was reported. That said, I don't think it should have been the first charge, and it probably shouldn't have been any charge, because the other charges related to both the documents that you referenced and, of course, January 6th are so much stronger and so much more consequential in the context of Trump's insidious and corrosive effect on American democracy.
Dennis, you've been itching to get in here. Dennis, go right ahead.
Yeah, no, I think to me, if Trump is found to be not guilty in this trial, then I think that creates momentum for him going forward.
Yeah, but can he? I mean, let's just be honest. Strip all of the spin away. Is there any way Donald Trump gets a fair trial in New York City? Seriously?
I don't think so, but I think
he's going to be convicted. I mean, come on.
But I think that either way he wins. I think to your earlier point, that if he loses, then it just looks like the books were cooked and he's, being hung out to dry. If he wins, then that creates momentum for him with those people that, may be in a position to hold their nose and vote for him.
Well, I don't think I would have used the phrase "the books are cooked" because that's kind of the point of the whole. That's the point of the whole. I think that's the point of the whole thing here.
I heard somebody say the other day.
Come on over to the R side now.
It's a sad day in America when you can't pay hush money to a porn star.
Yeah, come on. What's this country coming to? My goodness, John.
I think Democrats ought to be very careful. We can't get too enamored by the fact that he's in hot water legally. Yes, we know that the RNC and his campaign is spending, and they're hemorrhaging spending the kind of money that they are on legal bills. Ask the Clintons. Legal costs are very expensive.
And that's a good thing. My wife always says it's great when the lawyers get paid. That's what my wife says. But go ahead.
There you have it. Everybody's got to be paid. But the bottom line is this. Democrats need to run on what they've accomplished. They need to run hard. They don't need to take anything for granted. They shouldn't take labor. They shouldn't take African-Americans, Latino voters, and women voters for granted. We cannot lose any ground, especially in those seven key battle states. And we need to run very hard, run a very precise race, and be disciplined. We can't allow ourselves to get caught out everything going on the sidelines, what's going on in Florida, what's going on in New York. We have to stay focused on what the goal is in November.
And you mentioned, hang on a second, because I want to follow up on something that you said, John. You mentioned the African-American vote. I was reading recently, I think it was McCain got 2-3% of the African-American vote. Mitt Romney got like 4-6% of the African-American vote. In 2016, Donald Trump got about 12%. And so those numbers are going up when it comes to minority voters voting Republican.
Well, let me say this. It's so ironic you bring that up. I had a chance to watch a very colorful video clip yesterday or day before yesterday at Chick-fil-A where President Trump went in there. And let me say this. The reaction that you saw from one of the African-American young ladies there, that is not indicative of what the norm is amongst African-American voters as it relates to President Trump. You go talk to any black pastor, you go to talk to average African-American leaders, they know what this administration has done for African-American homeowners, African-American families, student loan debt. The list goes on and on and on. I think what you saw was a bit of a show the other day in Atlanta. I believe it was in Georgia at the Chick-fil-A.
It was.
That is not the norm.
I know it's not the norm, but at the exact same time that Trump is hugging people and buying Chick-fil-A sandwiches at Chick-fil-A, I think the counterpunch to that is that Biden is at a state dinner, eating who knows how much, $2,000, $3,000 a plate meals while Trump's at Chick-fil-A. You got to admit the optics on that were in Trump's favor.
Well, you could say the next night President Trump is at Mar-a-Lago hosting the wealthy of the wealthy at his resort.
That's a good point. Hey, I hate to cut you off because we're coming up on a hard break here. We've been talking, of course, today with John Gaskin, Democrat lobbyist, Jeff Smith. Everybody knows Jeff. And Dennis Hancock, St. Louis County Councilman. Thanks so much for joining us. We're on a hard break. We'll be back right after this. Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.